Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm your host, Rita Peters, recording today's program via Skype with my wonderful co-host, Mark Meckler. And Mark, I understand you have a new puppy in the house. How's that going today?
That's probably a loaded question, you know, because he is a Great Dane. And you, of course, have an Irish Wolfhound. These are giant breed dogs. And so for those of you who've never had a dog like this, understand, a fair warning, Rita and I could tell you, hers is now 185-pound puppy. Mine is about a 25-pound puppy. It's like having a 25-pound Tasmanian devil in the house. So I will never say that it's going well. It's just going.
Well, thanks for making it anyway, in spite of all that. So, Mark, our regular listeners will have heard us do a couple of interviews earlier this month on the topic of education. That's kind of turned into our focus for several weeks now. Those interviews were in lead up to an education conference that was hosted by the Virginia-based organization called the Middle Resolution, which has a real passion for ensuring that all kids have access to quality education and school choice. So we're going to continue that conversation about education with today's guest, Craig DeSessa. Craig is president of the Middle Resolution, and he's a longtime personal friend of mine. So I know how passionate he is about education. Craig, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Rita and Mark. Really appreciate this opportunity to share, you know, what we're doing in the education space and have been doing for quite some time, actually, with the new administration and control of the House of Delegates. Now, we have a lot of hope that we can get some stuff passed over the next couple of years, some good legislation to advance education choice.
So, Craig, you know, I want to jump right into the summit. But I've got a precursor question for you,
sure.
Which is, we're talking about Virginia and Richmond, and that's your focus. But education has become, at the local level, a national issue. Why do you think it's such a hot topic nationally right now?
I think a lot of this came out of COVID. A lot of this energy that we've seen, you know, Loudoun County, Virginia, was the tip of the spear last year. And what a lot of people don't realize is this Loudoun County is not uncommon. I mean, other counties are having the same problems. I mean, the stories I could tell you, because we're getting involved in school board races, is pretty frightening. And parents became very aware of what was going on in the schools. The other thing is, there's a lot of issues like the transgender issue in the schools has really sort of sparked a lot of interest for parents. They're very concerned. The whole thing where men are allowed to compete in women's sports, young men. Again, there's all these things that the left has been pushing for years, and it's now all of a sudden starting to be noticed, coming to fruition. And so parents are really going, wait a minute, what has been going on in our schools for the last couple of years? This is across the country. The other thing that all of a sudden in Virginia, I don't know if you've seen the report that came out last week from the governor. His superintendent of public instruction is Jillian Balo, who's out of Wyoming. She's a really sharp woman. And he said, I want you to put a report together of what's going on in Virginia and in schools. And the report basically said this: we are trending downwards in our education of our children. And there's something called the honesty gap that's being used around the country. And basically what it is the NAEP scores, which is considered the national report card for education in K through 12, reports very different proficiency percentages, fourth graders, eighth graders, that kind of thing, than the local state's reporting. Like in Virginia, we use something called standards of learning, SOLs. And I'll give you one example, and don't hold me to the exact numbers, but fourth grade reading proficiency reported by Virginia was 75% proficient in 2019. The NAEP score is 25% proficient.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And you got to get into the definition of proficiency and all this stuff, but trying to provide some sort of a basis for people to understand what's going on. Parents are starting to realize this. And we've interviewed quite a few school board candidates this year. And many of them are parents, grandparents, who have all of a sudden said, wow, I didn't know this was going on in our schools. I want to make a difference. So I think COVID and then just all of these policies that the left has been slowly adding or putting into our school systems, using pedagogy to push divisive concepts like CRT and so forth. And it's just finally all starting to come together.
So because of a lot of this and because of your probably lifelong interest in education, you guys held an education summit in Richmond a few weeks ago. Can you tell us a little bit about what your impressions are coming out of that summit and what did you learn?
The first day we had a school board candidate training. The signup was weak and I was a little surprised, but all of a sudden people showed up and didn't sign up. And so we had this packed room, standing room only, and Leadership Institute did the primary training. And so what I learned from that is, again, you've got these parents who are all of a sudden saying, I've got to make a difference. They're becoming activists. This reminds me sort of similar to the Tea Party movement in 2010, right? Which you were obviously very involved with. And all of a sudden people are going, wait a minute, what is going on around here? And so I was concerned that after kids went back to school, that parents would, you know, sort of take a big sigh of relief and go back to their lives, right? My kid's back in school, I don't have to worry about it anymore. And we saw a little bit of that. And then all of a sudden during the summit, I realized, wait a minute, no, these people are here. The summit was filled with parents and just groups and organizations I'd never heard of. And that was our goal, is to bring people in that we didn't know. I mean, you can have a summit, you can have the usual characters that always show up to these things. And we had that, of course. But then we also had lots and lots of people that I'd never known, never met before. And, you know, coming up to me, coming up to all of our folks saying, wow, we really appreciate what you're doing. So there's still a lot of energy out there. Mm-hmm. And so we've created something called the Virginia Education Opportunity Alliance, and VEOA.org. And the whole goal of this alliance is to create the largest coalition ever in Virginia. Well, I may not be as big as COS. I mean that. You guys have a lot of years ahead of us on this, but the goal is to push for education choice in Virginia because parents are crying out for it.
Yeah.
They're looking for solutions. And in this coalition, we're actually going to have our first statewide call next Thursday at noon. And I'm encouraging people to go on our website. They can apply to become a member of this coalition. And we're going to be training folks. We're going to education choice and all those kind of things. But anyway, a lot of momentum out there. I also learned that people are still pretty ignorant about what's going on. When we had our summit, we had all kinds of speakers. We had panels. And most of all that information I knew, and I kind of like, okay, yeah, this is good, but most of those people don't know it, right? So yeah. It was very informative. I was talking to meeting with a committee that's searching for candidates in a county here in Virginia, and they asked me to come talk to them because they would love our support in their school board races. And they said, we had two candidates there at your training, and they said they got a lot of good information from that. They learned a lot about how to run campaigns, that kind of things. So you're dealing with people that don't know a lot about what's going on. They have no idea how to run a campaign. School board races are, you know, a prayer, a couple signs and a couple doors knocked, right? Well, we're taking that to a whole nother level. So anyway, I hope I answered your question. We learned a lot about where the state of people are and what they understand at this point.
Hey, Rita, I know you're going to jump in here with another question, but real briefly, I just wanted to comment on what Craig said about the Tea Party movement and having been heavily involved in that. I actually think this is bigger and I think it's more important and I think it's going to have a longer term impact. And one of the big reasons, Craig, I would say is, first of all, if you make parents angry about what people are doing to their kids, there's no greater passion. Right. It's not politics, right? This is very personal to them. Mm-hmm. And I would add that one of the things that happened in the Tea Party movement, it was not bad, but it was a concern, is most of us were older. I was about 50 at the time that it happened, and I was one of the younger folks leading the Tea Party movement. And what this is parents, they're 25 and 30 and 35. And so I believe this is going to have a very long tail in politics. When people run for school board, some of them tend to run for city council later and county board and then into the state assemblies and then on up into Congress. So I think this has a very long tail. I think this movement, as I think it's appropriately called, is going to affect American politics for a long time to come.
And I completely agree with you. And I talked to a lot of people who've been around a long time. Morton Blackwell, who, you know, started and leads the Leadership Institute, was chatting with him not too long ago. And, you know, they started a school board candidate training. He goes, we've got to fill that void. And he believes that the only way you make a change is through moral outrage. And it's his big phrase, moral outrage. And I think we all would agree with that. He said, I've never seen this much extent of moral outrage in the country, especially here in Virginia, because of what happened in Loudoun and it becoming sort of the tip of the spear And I think people probably recognize, wow, what's happening in Loudoun, that's actually happening in my school district all over the country. Not everywhere, not in all school districts. A lot of the ones that obviously have been taken over by woke school board members and administrators and that kind of thing. So I would agree with you. There's tremendous potential here. But at the same time, we can't take it for granted. We have to form coalitions like what I just described to keep parents engaged and keep them and train them and give them hope, because a lot of them are going to get discouraged. We want to pass education savings accounts in Virginia. That's the primary objective of this coalition. It's not going to happen next year, likely, because the Senate's still controlled by Democrats. Mm. But create a wedge issue for the 2023 Senate election. So we have state Senate elections and House elections in 2023. Hold the House, get the Senate. And the governor has already said, I will definitely sign legislation like that. We have our job to do to keep these people engaged.
So, Craig, you've mentioned kind of two tracks that the middle resolution is working on with regard to education. And at least it seems like there are two tracks. The one is school choice policy. And so the way I would explain that to listeners who aren't familiar with the phrase is school choice basically consists of some sort of policy that lets taxpayer funding essentially follow the student, so that it puts the parents in the driver's seat of which school, which form of education is best for their own kids. And then the other track of activity you mentioned has to do with school boards, training school board members, training candidates to run for school board, and getting the grassroots involved in school board elections. So tell me, why are you involved in both of those tracks? Some people might say, well, they're two different things, because one involves letting kids and families get out of the public system. The other involves the public system. Why both tracks?
It's all the education space, right? And that has been a focus of ours since 2014. Actually, it was a focus of mine in 2011. I work with a ministry called Camp Hope Worldwide, and we do Christian camps for at-risk children. And I met a young 10-year-old boy who told me that he was a bully. And I said, what, you know, have you ever talked to anybody about conflict resolution? He claimed he was being bullied. He was the actual bully. And then he looked at me first time that week, because it's a week-long camp. He said, Craig, you know how we deal with that conflict in my house? And he showed me under his forearm a 6-inch scar from a knife. He said, we use knives in my house. I was stunned. I was not trained on how to deal with that. And it really bothered me. It really bothered me. So I started investigating, why is it so bad in the inner cities, for example? And policy is a big part of the problem. And education policy is at the top of that list. And so that's when we started to get involved in education policy. And so it's been a focus of ours for a long time. Going to your question about school boards and education choice. Education choice provides parents with all kinds of options to educate their children. We actually have in our code here in Virginia, we have something that says that parents have the fundamental right to educate and raise their children the best way they see fit. That's paraphrased. It's 1-240.1 if anybody's interested in looking it up. So we believe in Virginia, according to the code, the parents have that right. Well, they don't have that freedom right now. They don't have education freedom. We have 8 charter schools in Virginia. Only 8. And the reason we only have 8 is because the school boards have complete power in deciding whether a charter school is formed or not in their district. And every time there's an application going to the school board, they reject it. There's no appeal. Whereas states like North Carolina have 50, 70 charter schools. Are they all good? No, but a lot of them are. And they're saving children's lives. And in Virginia, we have one tax credit program that is only for lower income kids. And only 4,500 kids are taking advantage of this right now because they don't know about it. And the legislature does everything in their power, the Democrats, to prevent more choices because they don't want kids leaving the public schools. So we want to give parents more options. The other thing that it does, and I think you probably know this, is providing more options in education puts more pressure on the public schools. Public schools aren't going anywhere. You're not going to see this mad rush of students leaving the public schools. It's just not going to happen. And we've had school choice now, and I don't like using that phrase. I encourage people to use education choice or education freedom. In Virginia, school choice has a very bad connotation because of massive resistance. We had that back in the 50s and 60s. Providing more choices for parents will put pressure on the public schools to do better. And anywhere they have choice, education choice, and Florida is a perfect example, they see the public schools improving. It's not significant, but it is an improvement in their scores and so forth. That's one of the reasons we're into education choice. We think it's the most comprehensive way to improve public schools and to provide parents with more options in education, which gets into parental rights, which is really sort of the umbrella issue here.
So I want to back up a little bit, because I think sometimes, and you mentioned this with your education summit, sometimes we make an assumption, those of us who are sort of paying attention to this stuff and maybe do it for a living, that people understand a lot of this stuff. And so you said something in there that I think you and I understand, Rita understands, but my experience talking to folks just out there in the real world, outside of the think tank world or the action world that we live in, people don't even know what charter schools are. So can you explain to folks who may not know, maybe their grandparents whose kids aren't in the school system, or folks who've never had kids, what's a charter school? How does it differ from a public school? Why is it important that you have more charter schools?
Well, let me back up a little bit. So in 17, we formed something called Education United. It's a C4 nonprofit. And the whole goal was to educate parents on their lack of choices in Virginia. So we spent a lot of money on polling, you know how that goes, a ton of knocking doors. And we did two different ones. We went in first without educating people on what their education choice is. And it was so low on what they understood about choices in education, because we just don't have them in Virginia. We went back and educated these folks a little bit, and the approval rating went through the roof once they learned what it was. So a charter school is a public school. And usually a charter school has a charter. They apply for a charter and they focus on STEM, for example. We have one in Richmond, Virginia, and they focus on science, math, and so forth. And these charter schools all over the country, but it is a public school. And typically, you'll get a lot of, so an objection from the public school folks is, well, you're going to cherry pick the smart kids. Well, that doesn't happen, because they're almost all of them are lotteries, right? And so that's not true. And in New York City, I mean, Bloomberg, I think he put $150 million into the charter schools, because they're educating children. So charter schools are a really important part of the choice movement. But it's important to understand, a lot of people don't realize they are public schools. They're part of the public school system. There's other types of, I don't know if you want me to get into the other types of education choice. There's, of course, there's homeschooling, and there's private schools. Basically, that's sort of what it comes down to. And then there's programs that allow you to go to either to homeschool or to go to private schools that allow money to follow the child, what Rita referred to a little bit ago. So that's sort of in a real nutshell about charter schools and private schools and homeschooling.
Thanks, Craig. That's really helpful. To our listeners, if you're just joining us now, we're talking to Craig DeSessa, president of the Middle Resolution in Virginia. And Craig, if people want to learn more about this education initiative of the Middle Resolution, can you give us the website again where they should go to get more information?
Yeah. It's www.veoa.org. And that stands for Virginia Education Opportunity Alliance.
Thanks. That's great. Now, I'm wondering, you know, as I listen to you talk, as I've interviewed a couple of other education experts earlier this month talking about education freedom and choice when it comes to schools for kids, you know, the question, the elephant in the room is, how can anyone be opposed to this? It just makes perfect sense that we as parents should have as much choice as possible as far as where we send our kids to get educated. So tell us just a little bit about who is opposed to these initiatives and why.
The people that are opposed to this are people that are completely dependent upon the public schools for their livelihood. I mean, that's what it comes down to. So you have the National Education Association and the American Federation of Teachers, AFT. They're the two largest education unions in the country, and they have a lot of money. And they are trying to protect, you know, what they have. And they perceive that if students start leaving the public schools, they're going to lose their power and their money, because teachers belong to those unions and they pay dues. All right. It's a typical union situation. So they oppose this lock, stock, barrel. And then they have the NAACP National on board with them. I'm guessing that they give them a lot of money. And I can give you some interesting examples of how local NAACPs see the benefit of school choice or education choice and are butting heads with the national. So that's basically where you're getting the opposition from. And then, of course, you've got your school board associations. So that's most of your school board members belong to the association. Well, they see this as a threat because they get their money from people that pay their dues. School boards paid Virginia. It's called the Virginia School Board Association, VSBA. And it's like 10 or 15 grand a year per school board to belong. So that's a lot of money for them. And then, of course, they have their lobbyists and their lawyers down there. And that's who we go up against all the time in committee hearings and things like that. The Virginia Education Association, we don't have public unions in Virginia, but they act just like the union. And so they fight us because, again, they see this as a threat. And then, of course, they support in Virginia Democrats because Democrats, they're going to fight for them. And so the Democrats oppose all of this. Now, we're slowly picking them off. We have a senator in the Senate. As a Democrat, Joe Morrissey has said, I will definitely support universal ESAs if I get to vote on them, kind of thing. So it's slowly starting to move in our direction, but we still have tremendous opposition.
I get that that's who the opponents are. What I don't get is why policymakers listen to them, because it doesn't seem like they have any legitimate arguments as far as what's best for the students. The arguments seem to be about what's best for them and the stakes that they have in keeping the status quo. What can we do, Craig, as people who see how obvious this is? How can we make a difference?
Get engaged, get involved. I mean, that's the whole point of the coalition, the VEOA. That is the whole point. You know, what we want to do is train these folks how to form their own small grassroots movement within their community. Train them on what is education savings accounts, what is education choice, how does it impact the schools, how do they address the opposition's arguments. The biggest one is you're taking money from the public school, okay? That's the biggest argument. And that actually is a false argument, but it's easy to say, right? Oh, you're taking money from the public school, you're going to leave behind, you know, the bad kids, the good kids are going to go, and so on and so on, which we know is not true, especially after two decades of data now. We know that's not true. Getting engaged, encouraging everybody, go to veoa.org and take a look at the website. And if it's something you think you'd like to be involved in, I highly recommend people join us. We're going to start monthly calls and we're going to do town halls around the state. We're going to get involved in churches, especially in the inner cities. We're going to start working with African-American pastors. We're working on African-American leaders. I'm going to go see Governor Wilder because I think he's going to support this. You know, I mentioned the professor from Randolph-Macon College a little while ago. I think he'll definitely support stuff like this. And we were challenged at the summit, by the way, by Michael Benjamin. I don't know if you know that name. Michael's a black gentleman who was very instrumental in Florida getting education choice passed back in the 2000s. And he looked around the room and he goes, you know what? I don't see a lot of people look like me. And you guys got to change that. And he's absolutely correct. Now, I will tell you, though, we do have the lieutenant governor. If you go to that website I just gave you, she has a video there. And she is behind this 100%. And she wants to be the one who makes that bill, the next bill we put together, a universal ESA, introduced in the General Assembly. But that people have to get engaged. That's how we make a difference.
Yeah, you're right. Engagement is really the key, Craig. And people have to do that if we really want to change things up and get the system that we know is the best system.
For me, this is the civil rights issue of our time. And being involved in school board elections, I mean, this is something that people have a hard time doing. They don't know how to choose. They've never been involved in them before. But I would say if you look at upper middle class, wealthy white folks, people like us can move our kids anywhere we want. I mean, we probably can afford it even if it's a stretch. Maybe there's a mom at home that can homeschool the kids. There's a lot of choice. The people who really don't have the choice are the people who have the least among us. If they're inner city folks, they're single moms, single parents raising kids alone.
Rural communities.
Yep. So I think this is really important. If we want to make sure that we raise up a generation and raise people out of poverty in difficult situations, education freedom, from my perspective, is the primary issue.
Absolutely. Well, when you think about it, it's the future of our country, right? What's been coming out of higher ed? Those folks are going to teaching our kids in K-12. And now we have this cycle, right? And it's not good. And we need to change it. We need to address higher ed as well. But right now we're focused on K-12 because there's a generation of children who, I mean, especially after COVID, who they can't read, they can't write. I mean, it's awful. We know that reading, if you don't read by third grade, I mean, your chances of having, you know, being able to get a good job and be able to raise your family it makes it much, much more difficult. So we've got to change that. And the school board races, I don't know if I completely answered that question, but obviously getting involved in school board races, getting good candidates, training candidates. A big part of the problem is you get people elected to school board, they have one issue. And that's what we're running into these candidates. A real quick example, there's a woman running, her daughter had been assaulted in the school, ended up in the hospital for 2 days. The principal refused to give her the video that they had of this. She says, well, I'm going to the cops. They didn't report it to the cops. So they finally gave it to her. Then she reported it to the cops. And she's running for school board. But her issue is safety. And that's great. That's a big issue in a lot of these communities. But she needs to understand a wide spread of issues, especially the budget. That is the big one. If they don't understand the budget and they just rubber stamp what the superintendent says, guess what you're going to get? Equity committees. You're going to get lower standards, lower discipline standards. That's what you're getting now. And so these people have to be trained. I will say that the Heritage Foundation has started a school board member training program. And I was talking to Lindsay Burke, who's the head of their education division there at I forget what they call it, but at Heritage Foundation yesterday. She's going to join our first call. And she said that they've got the school board training. They had 650 people attend it recently. So it's a real opportunity.
Craig, I am so glad that the middle resolution and that they have you and that as an organization, you're doing what you're doing. We are out of time, so we need to close. As we close out the program, I want to make a personal plea to everyone who hears this. Please get involved with your local school board elections. There's, you know, it's hard to think of a public official who has more impact on your day-to-day life and what's happening in your community and in the future of our communities than a school board official. So please get involved. Craig DeSessa, thanks for being with us today. One more time, real quick, the website for people.
So you can go to www.veoa.org, Virginia Education Opportunity Alliance. Go on there, check it out. They can go do that. Thank you, Rita and Mark.
Really appreciate the opportunity. Sure. Thanks so much, Craig and Mark. That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services, Blessings Christian's Bookstore, Sunshine Ministries with Christian Radio, Wishing Well Florists and Travel Services, and our good friends at New Beginnings Church and Garber's Church of the Brethren in Harrisonburg. Thank you all for listening and for your financial support. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so. Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. I'm Rita Peters with our engineer Robbie Meadows and my co-host Mark Meckler, inviting you to join us again next week for another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.
Let us rejoice.